I want to talk to you about the peaking of world oil production. I'll tell you a little bit about the character of the problem and something about its mitigation. First of all, as I think you all understand, petroleum provides us a great deal that is essential to the way we live today. It provides us the fuels for transportation. 66% of the oil used in the United States goes for transportation. It's the primary feedstock for petrochemicals, pharmaceuticals, paints, nylon, and so forth. It provides us lubricants for most things that move, and it provides us heating oil and, in some places, electric power. What I'm going to do in the next few minutes is talk to you about the problem of peaking, what the economic impacts might be, mitigation options that we've analyzed, and then I'll tell you the results of three scenarios that we analyzed for the Department of Energy. First of all, let's talk about what peaking is. This is a conceptual picture of, as a function of time, the increase in global GDP, economic growth, United States and the world. And the fortunate thing for us is that the lifeblood of modern society, namely petroleum, has been increasing in productive capacity over that period of time. Healthy economy would continue as the dotted line shows. Peaking means that production of conventional oil reaches a maximum and then begins to decline. And that will lead to supply problems, which will lead to price escalations and shortages. This is a simple picture that tells you, hopefully, in simple terms, why peaking will occur. In the upper left-hand corner is a picture, a notional picture, of production from an individual oil field. You're looking at production going vertically and time horizontally. What happens when you discover an oil field is you drill a lot of wells and you connect up and production goes from zero on up over time and then reaches a maximum. And that is true in every oil field that has ever been found, and that's the character of the fundamental geology. After you reach the peak, you go into decline. You don't all of a sudden stop. It goes into a slow decline, which can take decades. That's what happens in individual oil fields. In regions, as shown here, the United States, lower 48 states, you can increase production over a significant period of time because you're finding and developing more and more oil fields, but at some point you reach a maximum, and then you go into decline. Again, look at that picture because that's what happened to us in the United States and the lower 48 states. That is one region. The world is made up of many regions, and what will happen at some point is the maximum in conventional oil production will be reached, and the world will go into decline. Why worry now? Because world oil demand, as you all know, has been growing, and it's very significant. World consumption of oil has been outstripping discoveries and additions to reserves, and I'll show you a picture of that in just a minute. And that's been going on for over 20 years. Oil production in 33 of the 48 largest oil-producing countries in the world is past peak. They're in decline. That's got a lot of people concerned. One of the things that our work and even relatively simple thinking shows is that mitigation takes time, and getting this wrong ain't good. The stakes are enormous for all of us. Next slide. This is a picture of the annual net of additions to world oil reserves, either through expansion of existing oil fields or the discovery of new oil fields, the annual as a function of time. And what you see is around 1980, we reached a maximum worldwide, and we have been in decline ever since. And today, depending on who you talk to, we're consuming 2 barrels for every barrel we add, and some people think it's more like 4 barrels. So we're headed downhill, and for those of you in biofuels, we are eating our petroleum seed corn. important things, two important things to recognize is that peaking is a maximum of production. It is not running out. There will still be production after we reach maximum. The second thing that's important for you to recognize is we're talking about a liquid fuels problem. People like to and have often talked about energy crisis. This really requires thinking about liquid fuels, and that's the character of the problem that we're worried about. Reality, as I think you know, is liquid fuels are essential to the way we and people throughout the world live. We have enormous investments in equipment, automobiles, airplanes, infrastructure, gas stations, refineries, and so forth. We can't change those things, and we can't afford to change them quickly. It will have to be slowly. In the very long term, we'll phase into a more sustainable future. But in the meantime, we've got to worry about how we manage things for the next 30 to 50 years. We have two examples of what can happen when we have shortages of oil, and that's 1973 and 1979. Those were relatively brief interruptions, and they led to high inflation, significant unemployment, recession, and very high interest rates. But as I said, those were short interruptions. Oil peaking is a problem that will take probably decades to fix. And the world has never faced a problem like this before. All previous transitions from one fuel to another have been evolutionary and relatively trouble-free. This is the first time nature is doing it to us. Since 1971, world GDP has increased approximately 3% per year, and oil demand has fueled that at something like 1.5% per year growth. What happens when we get into decline? Nobody really knows. Very hard problem to try to analyze, but I think in most people's minds that look seriously at this problem, if world oil supply is going to go negative, then world GDP is going to go negative. There's a number of very learned people, geologists, organizations, people with using various data that have looked at the question of when peaking will occur. The problem is nobody knows because the data is in many cases very political. In other cases, it's state secrets. And all we can really do is to use best estimates for what's out there. If you look at things on basically just a geological basis, this is what various people think. A few people think it's already occurred and we're at the peak right now. A number think it could happen in 5 years, a number 5 to 15 years, and then there's a few that think beyond 20 years. Doing these kind of calculations is really tough. This is a picture of what our Energy Information Administration thought about natural gas supply to the United States from North America. They are an outstanding organization. They have excellent access to data, and yet look at how wrong they got it. In 2002, they projected that there was going to be an increasing supply of natural gas for a significant number of years. 2003, they moderated somewhat, come on down to 2006, and they see essentially a flat picture. So we went from a situation that was looking very good and very optimistic to one where we are in trouble, where we just do not have, in North America, natural gas to meet the growing needs that we have here. So we're having to go into the import regime. Some people think that as far as oil is concerned, that high prices and technology will bail us out. And yet here's the picture again of what happened in North America, the lower 48 states, United States. In 1973, we had a dramatic jump in prices. We also began shortly thereafter what I'd call the golden era of technology development in the oil field. And both of those things, at best, created a bump in the decline. They did not turn around the decline. The decline is going to happen because of geology and its fundamentals. Interesting question is, how much warning will we have? As I said, some people think we may be there now. What we did is we looked at representative regions around the world that weren't influenced by cartel action or by people like Chavez or Putin revolutions and so forth. And what we found is shown on the next slide. If you look at Texas, which turns out to be a large geological province, you see that there was growth to a peak, and then there was a drop and decline thereafter. The same is true with North America, a very sharp peak and then a significant drop. The United Kingdom, a bump, and then a peak and a significant drop-off, and the same for Norway. It turns out, if you look carefully at what's there, you didn't have warning even a year before the peaking occurred, and afterward, the declines were significant. That's a frightening slide to me. Okay, the question is, what do we do about it? We're not about to roll over. We're going to do the best we can. What we did was to try to simplify the problem and to look pragmatically at what might be done. We looked at three scenarios. The first one is the typical one, where we wait until a problem is obvious and then take action. The second one is we get smart and we address the problem 10 years before it occurs, assuming we have that. And the third is we get smart and start 20 years beforehand. What we did was to look at a worldwide crash program. In other words, the very best that we and other people felt would be humanly possible in terms of working the problem. That is the most optimistic case. These are the things that we looked at. We looked first at vehicle fuel efficiency, which is, of course, going to be extremely important. We looked at heavy oil and oil sands, Canada and Venezuela. There's abundant coal in the world that can be converted to very clean liquids, so that's called coal liquefaction. There's natural gas that is remote and could be converted and is being converted to liquids now. And there's enhanced oil recovery, the use primarily of carbon dioxide to get a little more oil out of those reservoirs that are depleting. Why did we pick these? Because they're commercial or near commercial, they're ready to go, and the name of the game here is implementation, building things. On transportation, these are numbers from 2003. You see the share of transportation for autos and light-duty vehicles, 39% plus 28%. Heavy trucks are important. Airplanes are important also. But we looked particularly at light-duty vehicles. The median lifetime of those vehicles, thank heavens for those of us that have vehicles and want them to last for a long time, is that they have 17 and 16-year median life. In other words, half will be gone after that period of time. That means it's going to take us a long time, as I think this audience knows, to turn over the fleet and move to very efficient vehicles. This is a little cartoon that kind of shows the character of the problem for the United States. The blue area is roughly a picture of how big the the existing light-duty vehicle fleet is. The additions are shown in the green sliver on the top. They come in on an annual basis, and the retirements are less than the additions. That's why it's going to take us a long time to turn that fleet over. As many people know, it takes energy to produce energy that we can utilize. If you look at this notional slide, you can see that the easy oil that we were fortunate enough to get in the good old days of those Texas gushers and so forth had an energy payback of something like 100. In other words, you put in one unit of energy to do the work and you got 100 units out. As you get to offshore oil, which we're producing worldwide now, you have to put a lot more energy in. Those structures that you build and the drilling that you have to do come down, bring the energy payback down considerably. As you go to gas to liquids, heavy oil, coal to liquids, and shale oil, you're down even lower. And if you go to corn-based ethanol, you approach unity. In other words, you're putting in as much as you're getting out, roughly speaking. Things that we didn't look at are indicated here. Nuclear, wind, and solar are in the market today, but they produce electric power. And you can't put electric power into your gasoline-fueled vehicle now. You need wholly new vehicles. We need liquid fuels. I was on the Academy Committee that looked at a hydrogen economy. It's going to be a long time before that happens. It's neither ready nor economic. Biomass is really not economic in this country now. You know very well that biofuels are highly subsidized. The situation would be different if they weren't. Shale oil is not yet commercial in the United States, so that's why we did not look at these particular options. It's not to say that over time, a number of those options may make small and growing contributions. This is a picture of what one gets for a crash program for those technologies that we looked at. What you're seeing in the vertical axis is impact in millions of barrels of oil per day, and on the horizontal axis, what happens over a 20-year period. What you see is that there is a delay associated with the beginning of contribution. In other words, if you're going to change vehicles to very fuel-efficient vehicles, you've got to change over the assembly lines. That's a couple-year, three-year delay before you can begin to have impact. As time goes on, fuel efficiency then builds up as those vehicles displace the less efficient vehicles. You've got gas to liquids in there, heavy oil, coal liquids, and enhanced oil recovery. The overall picture is delay. You can't start something up until it's built, and you're talking about very large facilities. Energy is inherently very large scale. You're talking about delay and roughly maybe 35 million barrels a day at year 20. Have to have a picture of what world oil peaking is likely to look like. And what we did was to take the situation for the U.S. lower 48 states, which is approximately a straight line growth at something like 2% per year to peak, and then 2% decline thereafter. We don't know when peaking will occur. You saw the uncertainty in the slide I showed you before, so we let that be the 0 year. Let that be the 0 year. We assumed that a healthy growing world economy would continue at something like a 2% rate. And so you can see the shortage develop when oil production goes into decline and the need worldwide for continued economic growth continues to expand. So that's the picture that we used for the world. Nobody knows exactly what that'll look like. And if you go back to some of those slides I showed you, those pictures I showed you before, the decline could be much more rapid than 2%. All right, let's take then what we found for a crash program and put it into that pattern. And I think you can probably imagine what that looks like. If you wait until the problem occurs, you're going to have a delay, and then mitigation will begin to impact. But worldwide, you'll be looking at a very significant shortage over a 20-year period. In other words, it's running away from you. You can't catch it. If you start 10 years before the problem, as indicated here, you're going to put off geological peaking, and mitigation can have a significant impact. But within the 20-year period after peaking, you've still got a problem. And if you start 20 years beforehand, you can conceivably beat the problem. And remember, this is a crash program and the most optimistic case. To sum it all up, if you wait for peaking, you're in a worst-case situation. You're looking at a period like after 1973 and after 1979, when you have severe recession and some people think even economic depression for a very long period of time. If we start early, assuming that we have the time to do that, we still have serious trouble. If by chance we have 20 years and if we have the will to get started soon on a major basis, then conceivably we can get around the problem. I said we used a 2% decline rate. there are a number of people out there who feel that an 8% decline rate may be more characteristic of what happens in the world. I've shown here just a picture of what happens in our first scenario, where you wait until peaking occurs. And the graph on the left shows you exactly what I showed you before. On the right, you can see that the magnitude of the problem is much, much worse. If I go back to all those projections, scenario three says we have a chance of beating the problem. We had better hope that a whole lot of those folks are wrong, and that indeed things are much better than a number of people think. That's scenario three. We better hope that works. What about the Chinese? They have publicly stated that they think peaking world oil production is going to occur in 2012. And they see a gap growing like this, which is not dissimilar to what it is I showed you. What the Chinese are doing, though, is they are out there in all parts of the world buying into oil supply and making investments in various countries, some of them that are beyond what the United States and our oil companies can deal with, and they are securing supply for themselves. So they're putting their money where their mouth is. Okay, this whole problem is difficult to understand. I've given you a little bit of taste. You've got to get into it a little to look at the geology and why geology and reserves are different than inventory like you have in normal businesses. Oil peaking is going to occur. There is simply no question about that. But the timing is uncertain, and that's a problem for a whole lot of people that are decision makers. It could be soon, and our study indicates soon is 20 years. We're looking at a liquid fuels problem, and that's where our focus has to be, at least in the near term. This will be the world's first forced energy transition. We're not going to have a choice. We're going to have to deal with it. There are mitigation technologies ready to go. There are things beyond what it is we analyze that will make contributions along the way. We're going to need everything, including a number of socially forced things like rationing and so forth. But with the will and with enough time, we can conceivably minimize our damage. Thank you.